Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation. It's the great debate. But it can only be a debate if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls on 44208601455. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line. And remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero. Otherwise, I'll have to press swiftly on. You can also SMS the show on 4478008066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. And we're joined, as always, at this time of the week by listeners to Colourful Radio, based in London, but spreading the colour throughout the land and other lands. But those listeners should know that the details I've just given, phone numbers, etc., are for this show only. We'll be asking, how can the Syrian fanatic extremists be stopped as they continue to lay waste to civilian life throughout the land, even whilst the entire world, more or less, give or take a few tyrannies here and there, already knows that this war has been lost by the fanatics and is on its way to a diplomatic solution as we approach the end of the year and the beginning of the run-up to Geneva II, the negotiation, which has, as if by a miracle, but actually because of the resistance of the Syrian people and their friends to any possibility of these fanatics triumphing in Syria, is about to begin. Britain and the United States announced yesterday that they were halting their non-lethal aid to the Syrian militants, were halting it because it was, frankly, passing directly into the hands of Al-Qaeda. Well, I could have told them that. No, wait a minute. I did tell them that. Of course, if you are putting non-lethal military aid, which of course is very lethal in any case, into this cauldron where tens, scores of thousands of foreign fanatic extremists are increasingly the dominant military force, how can the moderate militants possibly hold on to that equipment? It will be taken from them by Al-Qaeda. And that's exactly what has happened. And Britain and the United States are now doing what I called on them to do almost 30 months ago, which is to halt the supply of war material into a war which has killed more than 100,000 people, laid waste some of the most precious national heritage in Syria, some of the most historic and religiously significant sites in the world have been destroyed by these militants. We're asking, though, how can they be stopped as we prepare for the negotiations at Geneva II? After all, they're still wiping out civilians in very large numbers. And as relations sharply deteriorate between Russia and the West, the proximate cause being the crisis in the Ukraine, we have a very, very dangerous state of affairs. As the United States seeks to ring Russia with hostile or certainly not friendly state forms, the United States is continuing to develop its plans for a European-based national missile defense program. Now, it used to be that this Star Wars fantasy of Ronald Reagan's was to deal with the threat from an Iranian nuclear weapon. But it's now been accepted that there is no Iranian nuclear weapon. There is no prospect of an Iranian nuclear weapon. And therefore, the entire rationale that the United States advanced to persuade European countries to be the site of an American anti-missile defense has disappeared. And it's now clear, to the Russians at least, that there's nothing defensive about the National Missile Defense Scheme. It's entirely offensive. And as Dmitry Rogozin, the Russian Defense Department official, warned today, Russia continues to reserve the right to use its nuclear weapons if there is any threat to Russian security. This is as strong a statement from any Russian official as has been heard for more than 25 years. And the United States and the world better waken up to that. I'll tell you what I mean. In the Ukraine, a sovereign country where there are political disagreements over whether or not to join Russia's customs union or join the European Union pathway to membership of the European Union, where the country is divided down the middle, what's the attitude of Western leaders to civil, not conflict yet, but civil unrest in the Ukraine? It's to send Western ministers to march on the streets of Kiev in marches that are demanding the resignation of the president and prime minister of Ukraine. This is simply madness. Imagine if President Putin's government was sending Russian ministers to march on the streets of London demanding the downfall of David Cameron. This would be regarded as an utterly unwarranted, unacceptable, intolerable intrusion into the domestic affairs of the United Kingdom. But that's exactly what's happening now in Kiev. Now, just for those who don't know, half of the people of the Ukraine are Russian people, Russian-speaking people. And so what we have is Western ministers going to the front line, really the front line, and interfering in the affairs of Ukraine because of their hatred of Russia. And that's what has prompted this warning from Russia today, from President Putin and from Rogozin, that Russia's defenses are mighty and they are more than capable of dealing with any threat to Russia's national security. So we have a very dangerous standoff now in Ukraine, and Russia is feeling threatened by Western powers, and that's not a good place to be. Gary in Halifax in Nova Scotia, in North America, in Canada, he knows how important this Russian official's warning are. Gary, thanks very much indeed for joining us on Comment this evening. What would you like to say?
Good evening, Charles. Good evening, George. How are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good. Thanks very much. Go ahead, sir.
Well, we have seen this situation with the Ukraine developing in periodic leaps and bounds. The last time things were almost at this level of confrontation was, of course, back at the time of one of those colored revolutions. I believe
it was orange.
2004, Ukraine was slated to have a so-called orange revolution.
Indeed, yeah. It never quite flowered in the way that the West hoped that it would.
Exactly, but it was a test case for what was to become an American pattern of supporting NGOs inside various countries that the U.S. wanted to compromise.
Yep, Trojan horses, as Fidel Castro called them.
So now we have a very different set of circumstances than in the early 2000s. The Russian economy has more or less recovered from a huge mess that it was in for a long time following the end of the Cold War. And the end of the Soviet Union is part of that. And it has reached the point where Russian natural gas is what keeps most of Europe warm through the winter.
Yep.
Now, there are some parts of Europe that are not going to be reached by Russian natural gas very soon. One of them is, of course, Britain. And Britain is very much a stalking horse for the Americans when it comes to planning confrontations against Russia using former parts of the Soviet Union, such as Ukraine.
And Georgia before it.
So it's a lot of this saber rattling is being very public between the Obama administration and the Putin administration. But at the same time, there is this question of the EU. And I can hardly believe that, for example, the government of Angela Merkel, is enthusiastic to see such a confrontation. Germany is a huge customer of Russian natural gas. Other parts of Europe, similarly, they're planning even to weather this current economic downturn, much less get out of it. Very much depends on stable, relatively low prices for imported Russian natural gas. So Ukraine's economy cannot withstand an extended confrontation of this kind, because it's one of the way stations for some of this Russian natural gas to reach Europe. And in fact, they are permitted to collect a relatively small but significant transit fee on these volumes of natural gas coming out of Russia heading into Europe. So the economic logic for this level of confrontation being sustained is relatively low. But the political situation is very near to spinning out of control in U.S.-Russian relations, because the U.S. is not going to stand for continually being bested diplomatically by Russia. They were very seriously put out by how the whole plan to attack Syria militarily was completely blown up from within by Putin pulling some brilliant diplomatic moves. So there's no small amount of this that is payback.
Well, you're right, Gary, but the political dynamic is clear. Just as sanctions are being reduced and hopefully soon removed on Iran, President Obama is now threatening sanctions against Ukraine, a country which has an elected president, an elected parliament, an elected prime minister, which is taking democratic decisions that President Obama doesn't like. And notwithstanding the point that you make, which is a good one, which is that there are many European countries who have no economic interest in instability in the Ukraine, in a rupture between Russia and the Ukraine, have nonetheless been sending their foreign ministers to march on the streets of Kiev, interfering in the domestic affairs of the Ukraine. And that's why President Putin and his Defense Department and his foreign ministry have in the last 48 hours just been warning the West that Russia is an important country. It is a powerful country. It will not accept any threat to its national security. It has no intention of seeking to lecture others on how they should live, how they should be governed. But it will not allow its vital interests to be threatened by the West. Thanks, Gary, as always, for your erudition. Breaking news, a blast has been reported in Egypt. A car bomb has killed a policeman and injured over 30 others in Ismailia on the Suez Canal. Now, let's talk to Niall in Dublin, in the Republic of Ireland, who's always worth hearing. Niall, how can these Syrian militants be stopped?
Merry Christmas to you, George.
And to you, sir. Thanks for that.
Yeah, in relation to the militants, George, you know, I was on the show there about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and I used the Frankenstein analogy to describe the monster of tax-free jihadism that the West and its Saudi allies has built up. And I think what is happening right now is that the chickens are coming home to roost in a big way, you know, with relation to Syria. Now, George, this process began way back in 1981 in Afghanistan when the United States trained, armed, funded, and facilitated the transport of Sunni Wahhabist jihadists to Afghanistan.
The British did too, now. The British had their hand in that pie as well?
Yep. They did indeed. Saudi Arabia and Great Britain as well, you know, back in the day. And also, about a decade later, they moved them straight then to Yugoslavia, where they were used in battle as proxies of and foot soldiers of American imperialism against the Yugoslav army in both Bosnia and in Kosovo. And now we're seeing them now turn up in the Middle East, in Syria. But there was a very, very important development that happened last week, George, was that the head of the so-called Free Syrian Army, General Idris, appealed, basically said to Assad that we will join with you, because they've now realized that the Al-Qaeda and all the other Takfiri guerrillas are the greatest threat to all Syrians and to the Middle East in general.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the British and American government have ceased the supply of non-lethal military aid. But that's not enough now. They have to tell their own satrapies in the Persian Gulf, these tyrannies that are paying for all of this, that they have to turn off the tap. That's the only way that these fanatics can be stopped. But our problem now is that when they're stopped in Syria, they'll still be all dressed up and they won't have nowhere to go. They'll have somewhere to go, back to where they came from, with all the grisly, murdering, throat-cutting, head-chopping skills that they've learned in the conflict in Syria. Thanks, Niall, in Dublin. Let's go to Farouk in London. Farouk, welcome. How do you think these Syrian fanatics can be stopped?
Hello?
Yes, go on, Farouk. You're on the air.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Walaikum salam. Go ahead.
Given your own analysis of the situation and the other analysts around the world, George, it's the big backers that's been, you know, getting these groups going to Syria now, which are so many kind of groups. We don't know which is which at the moment. You've got Nusra, you've got the Al-Qaeda group, and then you've got others coming from right of and center. But if the regional backers like...
There's 1,200 groups, Farouk.
Farouk,
there's 1,200 separate organizations of these fanatics. Of course, there's a spectrum. Some are extremely fanatical, some only moderately fanatical. But there's 1,200 separate militant groups fighting in Syria.
So it doesn't look really, Joe, that Geneva too is going to bring anything really, because they already preconditioned that Bashar.
It will divide the opposition, Farouk. That's its importance. It will divide the opposition between those who are patriotic to their country, who don't want to see a descent towards the Afghanistan of the early 1990s from those who do. That's the importance of the talks in Geneva, Geneva 2. It will divide the sheep from the goats. It will divide the people who can be negotiated with from those who can simply only be militarily defeated.
Long process we're looking at here. Because especially, you know, the things been projected there about the sectarian issue as well between Sunni and Shia, which was not there. It's just a makeup thing that they want to actually put forward to divide the Muslim into other groups.
Yeah, you but know, of course, it's a fake, false dichotomy, Farouk. Because as I've pointed out here before, the great majority of the soldiers in the Syrian Arab army fighting these extremists are themselves Sunni Muslims.
Yeah.
These fanatics do not represent the Sunni Muslims in Syria.
Definitely.
They represent only that very tiny, narrow strand of fanatic Takfiri extremism.
Exactly. And you sense, you know, what's happening in Lebanon as well. You know, they're spreading it. They're spreading with the backing of Saudi now going into bed with Israel. Now,
who'd have thought it? Who'd have thought it?
The regime only want to divide the area so that there'll be more turmoil, so they can go on with the task of expanding their grabs on the land of Palestine.
Absolutely right, Farouk, in London. Thanks for the call. Abdul Kader is on the line in South Africa, where we hail the memory of the freedom fighter Nelson Mandela, and we damn the hypocrites who turned up for his funeral, many of them personally responsible for supporting apartheid in the first place. Abdul Kader, welcome.
George, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, brother. Thank you.
A rather gloomy and wet capital city of South Africa, Pretoria.
Welcome.
Now known as Tswane. As you know, George, we in mourning, we've lost our father, the father of South Africa, in fact, of Africa. And
may God have mercy upon him.
I'd like to, may Allah's mercy be upon him, of course. I'd like to pay homage to him in that this was now a contrast, a great leader, a man of great humility, a man of great courage, and a man of great credibility. Unlike some of the rubbish that currently in our country paying mere lip service to this great icon that has passed away. Mr. Drone himself is currently in the country. And then we had a little glimpse of a very ugly, glum-looking George Bush and his wife. I must tell you, very unwelcome guests, but nevertheless.
And Tony Blair also.
Right.
Tony Blair too, Abdul Kader.
I didn't see Funny Blair, mind you.
Alas, he was there.
Not funny, but nevertheless.
Alas, he was there, though he was looking rather glum.
Thank God I didn't spot him.
I think he's heard I'm on his trail.
Yeah, no. George, you know, it's a pity, but nevertheless, I mean, I remember the great Madiba gave a total tongue-lashing to George Bush before they attacked Iraq on false pretenses. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he made it quite clear. One thing that will resonate throughout the days to come is he stated that South Africa will never be free until Palestine is free.
Indeed.
And we salute him for this, George. You know, this is a man that spoke his mind and he stood for justice and peace at the same time.
But Abdul Kader, on the subject of President Drone, I sent him the following tweet. I said, Nelson Mandela was a friend of mine. I knew Nelson Mandela. Mr. President, you're no Nelson Mandela. Abdul Kader, thanks for that call. I've got some breaking news. One of President Drone's killer machines, a US drone, has killed 13 people and injured 30 right now, breaking news, in a wedding convoy in Yemen. So here we have drones massacring innocent guests for a wedding in Yemen, whilst the real Al-Qaeda is now in possession of all the material that was sent by Britain and America to the so-called Free Syrian Army. And you wonder why we're discussing that subject again this evening. Yassin is the last caller before the break. He's in Hertfordshire in England. Yassin, go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, George Galloway.
Wa alaikum salam. Welcome, sir. Go ahead.
Shukran, brother. First and foremost, I would like to express my endless admiration I have for you, George.
Thank you, bro.
For all the work that you have done for so many years in speaking the truth and always, you know, being a representative for the people who are oppressed around the world, for the people who are voiceless, you know.
Thank you, brother.
May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless you in abundance for all your hard work. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala protect you, continue to protect you and your family, give you strength, give you good health, and so you can continue to touch so many people's lives.
Thank you. I don't
have much input to the Syrian situation. I just wanted to take this opportunity, George, to thank you.
Yassin, you touched me, and you will have touched my family also. I'm very grateful for your prayers, and I need them. I've made a lot of enemies because of my stand for justice and for liberation. Nelson Mandela was a friend of mine, the Nelson Mandela who was a freedom fighter, who spent 27 years incarcerated in apartheid dungeons, When David Cameron and Margaret Thatcher and others still on the Tory benches in Parliament were campaigning for him to be hanged and declaring that the ANC and Mandela were a terrorist organisation. We won, they lost, but they're pretending that they won. The revolution continues, as does comment, and I'll be back, God willing, in just 3 minutes' time after the news. Welcome back to the second half of Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We're asking, how can the Syrian militants be stopped as they continue to massacre innocent civilians at every turn? And how dangerous is the Russian official's warning, that was Dmitry Rogozin, but echoing a point made less sharply by President Putin earlier in the day, that Russia is beginning to feel unpleasantly pressured by the United States and the West, and the proximate cause of that is on the streets of Kiev. And Dmitry Rogozin was very blunt. He reminded the world that Russia's defense posture includes the right to use nuclear weapons if there is any threat to Russia's security. Pretty serious stuff. Hasn't been heard since even before the end of the Cold War. Adam is in London, though, on the Syria question. Adam, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, George. It's been a long time.
Indeed. Since I had an it's end. Very nice I to hear your voice again, Adam. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, George. I think whole day wouldn't have been enough for our conversation. But however, we need to compress it.
Yeah.
You see, this conflict in Syria, it's as a result of the hypocritic stance of the Western world, to be precise, America, Britain, and their extended or annexed countries like Israel, Saudi Arabia, and their likes. Saudi Arabia has nothing to do with democracy. They don't know what, there is nothing like democracy dictionary of Saudi Arabia.
No. You can't even elect. Like, you can't even elect the secretary of an association in Saudi Arabia. The entire concept is completely alien to them.
Yes. So, you see, if these people are the kind of people who are saying they are propagating democracy in one country, then God save the world. They are the financiers and the sponsors of the militants in Syria, those who are saying they are supporting or they are asking for people to be elected and free in the country. Look at the monks, the nuns that were captured.
Yeah.
Look at the people that were being killed in the Syria. So we call on the international community, I always say the so-called international community, because there is nothing like that, that they should try and stop this massacre of innocent people in the name of democracy, hiding behind their selfish interests, promoting their selfish corporations in other people's country to rip the country, to destroy and kill people in the country. We beg them in the name of God, Allah, that they should stop this kind of atrocities being perpetrated everywhere in this world.
I agree with all of that, Adam. And I'm grateful for your call. The British and the Americans have now ceased their military, non-lethal, they say, military aid to the Syrian fanatics. But that's because an even more fanatic group affiliated with Al-Qaeda has stolen all the material from warehouses that the so-called moderate fanatics were not able to defend. But the countries that you mention in the Persian Gulf are still flooding Syria with weapons and money. And they have to be told by their owners in London, in Washington, in Paris, that they have to stop this now, that the world has determined already that we're headed for Geneva too, to negotiate an end to this carnage which has cost the lives of so many people. Adam, thanks for the call. Let's hear from Farida, also in London, and also on the Syria question. Farida, welcome.
Good evening, George.
Good evening. Nice to hear from you. Go ahead.
I don't know whether I should feel sorry for Mr. Obama or feel angry with him. Listening to him addressing the South African memorial for Mr. Nelson Mandela, I think his heart is in the right place. But honestly, hello?
Yes.
George, as far as the American foreign policy in the Middle East is concerned, I think it's going to be too little too late to stop them arming the rebels now. And if they think that, you know, the foreign policy for the Americans is to have these proxy wars away from their own country, Mr. Obama is, you know, damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. And I wonder how he really feels about his aspirations to become like Mr. Nelson Mandela, because Mr. Mandela was a man of peace. And Mr. Obama, I'm sorry to have to tell him, he is going to be the exact opposite of what Mr. Mandela stood for.
Well, Farida, I don't know where President Obama's heart lies. Only God knows that, I suppose, in the end. But I do know where the hearts lie in Yemen this evening. The hearts of the tens of people that have just been massacred by a U.S. drone strike. I know where their hearts lie. They lie on the ground and their heads lie over there. Their bodies lie in pieces everywhere. And their crime was being in a wedding convoy in Yemen. Every Thursday, I think it is, President Obama hosts a kill meeting in the White House, at which a list of targets that these drones are to hit is brought forward and approved. And the killing that was done in Yemen right this evening, as we've been talking on this show, is authorized by President Obama. So where his heart is, I don't know. Where the hearts of the slain are is very clear. Farida, thanks for that call. Abdulaziz is also in London and also wants to talk about the Syria question. Abdulaziz, welcome to the show.
Hello, assalamu alaikum, Mr. George Galloway.
Wa alaikum salam, thanks for calling us. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Galloway, do you think the free militant leaders in Syria will escape from there to some of the Gulf countries, and this conflict which is going now between Daesh and al-Nusra, do you think this is the beginning of the end of the terrorism in Syria, and how? Thank you very much,
thank
Mr.
you.
Galloway.
Thank you.
Thank you.
La shukra la wajib. I'm very clear that the war is beginning to come to an end, but that doesn't mean that the carnage that can be wreaked by these fanatics will not continue, perhaps for many years. It doesn't mean that there will not be rivers of blood still spilled amongst the innocent civilian people of all religions and all sects and all nationalities, for that matter, in Syria will somehow be staunched. I don't believe that they will. The carnage in Syria will continue, but the war has been lost. It has been lost. The fanatic Takfiri militants have lost the war. They cannot dream of bringing down the government in Damascus. They cannot dream of raising up their black Al-Qaeda flag over the presidential headquarters in Damascus. They cannot dream of inheriting the great Syrian Arab Republic. This is a pipe dream. But although Britain and America, having looked into the abyss at the monstrosity that they had been so decisive in creating and recoiled from it, deciding to choose another path, that does not mean that the agents that they had and have in the region have similarly recoiled. And we now have the grotesque situation. There's no other way to describe it. The unholiest of all alliances between Saudi Arabia and Israel, unreconciled to the new policy towards Iran, unreconciled towards the new policy in Syria, who have the money and the means to continue the killing. So, in short, the war is not over, but it has been lost by the fanatics. And eventually, they will either be crushed or they will leave. And our problem is that they will leave back to whence they came. And that will be a problem in every country from which these fanatics have been exported to wreak their carnage amongst the people of Syria. Jacob is in London, wants to talk about the same subject. Jacob, welcome to the show. Jacob, welcome.
Hello. Hello, Mr. George Galloway. How are you?
By the grace of God, good. Go ahead, sir.
You're a living legend, and we all love you very much.
Thank you.
What I want to say about Syria is that, first of all, no one who knows how to defeat these thugs who are backed by the Western government, anybody who knows how to defeat them is not going to be revealing that on any kind of air, because every TV show, including yours, is being also listened to by those people who have instigated this situation in the first place.
Indeed.
But there is the problem stems from those people, including MEK, or they're known by many other names, and they are backed by the British Parliament and also by the European Parliament. And the core members who are positioned in London, in France, and in other locations around Europe, they are financing and they are supporting very top people, including members of parliament in UK, including members of Congress in America, in order to use their powers to facilitate situations such as placing sanctions on Iran, such as creating troubles around the world, including Syria. Now, the defeat of these people is not impossible. In fact, it is extremely possible. However, it is not wise to talk about that on air. So nobody who knows how to defeat these people is going to come on air and actually discuss it. But they are very much defeatable. And I want people who are listening to your show to actually investigate MEK and their relationship with the British European Parliament and the members of Congress in America. And anyone in members of Congress, as soon as they start supporting acts against Iran, acts against Syria, what you have to do is just put their name on the Google and search them to see if they support MEK or not. And you realize that they're supporting Camp Ashraf, they're supporting Maryam Rajavi, Masoud Rajavi, and the group. And that is how these people are able to get by, because they don't do it by themselves. They use a third party, a Congress, or a very powerful, legitimate member of government in order to push forward their agenda. That's
what okay, Jacob. Thanks for that. Powerful call. I have to cut it short, though, because I have a call from the Holy Ground itself, from occupied Palestine, where Marwan wants to talk about the Syrian situation. Marwan, thanks very much for calling us, and welcome.
George, how are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good. Go ahead, sir.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you and send you our love from here, from Palestine. We truly, on my behalf and from so many people here, we just want to send you our love and our appreciation. You are a true freedom fighter, and we just love you so much. So
thank you, Marwan. Thank you very much indeed. I'm sorry I can't be with you. I can't enter Palestine, any part of Palestine, from any direction at the moment. But I hope to live long enough that I can do so. If not, my sons will come to you and tell them you remember their father.
They will be most welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Your thoughts, your talks, and your shows and whatever you do just warm our hearts. It's so cold here, but just hearing you is make us very, very warm in that very cold weather here.
Thank you, Marwan. Wallahi.
I just want to say that sometimes leaders don't express what people think and what people want. And this is the situation in all Arab countries, including here. It's from start, it's dividing Shias from Sunnis. It's all for to weaken us. I don't think just people look at these small things. I think the religion is between you and God. It doesn't have to be a purpose. It doesn't have to. It has to be something to make you a better person, to put freedom in this land, and to help others to live a respect life. Mahmoud Abbas doesn't represent the Palestinian people, and so many other leaders don't represent their people, because they only think what best for them, and for them, and to stay in the chair of being the boss. Last week we lost a hero, Nelson Mandela. We should learn from him. I know that the history of Nelson Mandela was very close to President Arafat in the early 90s and in the 80s. I know that President Arafat and Fidel Castro helped him so much achieving his goal of freeing his people. And I think our leaders just lost that purpose of freedom and give their people to live a respectable life.
And Marwan, Habibi, there is nothing I can say in reply to that, except this. It's not just the best call of this night. It may be the best call I have ever received. God bless you. Long live Palestine. Free, Arab, dignified. Ammar is in London on the Syrian question. Ammar, welcome.
Same.
Ammar, you're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello, assalamu alaikum, George.
Walaikum salam. Welcome, sir. Go ahead.
Lovely program. Well, I wanted to speak about Syria today.
Yeah.
What I think is we need to go for the root of the problem, which is the wrong beliefs, this ideology those terrorists are using, plus their families whom accept that ideology for them to send their sons to go and kill other people.
Yeah.
I think we need to re-educate the people of the Middle East along with the other people about the real Islam. Because what these people are going and killing people in the name of Islam, which is the wrong Islam, this wrong ideology for in Saudi Arabia, which even Indonesia now is following the same line as Saudi Arabia. But now back to Saudi Arabia. They basically, I think the best idea, the best tool to get rid of these kind of ideology is going back to Saudi Arabia, going back to the regime of Saudi Arabia, which basically support this kind of ideology in Saudi Arabia and tries to send it and export it to other countries. Therefore, it's, even as in Iraq, same story in Iraq. It was happening in Syria, same story in Iraq. People are just taking that ideology on board and just going on with it in the name of jihad. They have no idea what happens to those kids of theirs once they go to Syria and what they go through in order to do what they've done. A lot of people gone to Syria, they just went for jihad thinking, okay, this is jihad against the wrong people. Yeah. But once they go there, they're finding something else, something totally different than what they went for. And for me, I'm against those terrorists. But to be honest here, to be just, I think it could be some of those people, they went to Syria just for jihad and they found it's something else actually.
Of course that's right, and we must have a path to forgiveness and allow always those who are confronting us to retreat from their confrontation. And it's just simple justice to be ready to forgive. But if the enemy keeps coming forward, keeps trying to commit greater and greater atrocity and crime, in the end, it will have to be defeated. And it is being defeated by the solidarity of the people of Syria, whether they are Sunni, Shia, Christian, Druze, Kurdish, Arab, whoever they have rejected this model, this Al-Qaeda model of Islam. And, of course, that makes them targets and enemies of these people. And we hope that the negotiations will bring this conflict to an end. It may take some time, but the military campaign to defeat them will undoubtedly continue. And I, for one, have made my stand on that. I've made my choice on that, whatever the consequences might be. Let me take Cyrus in the UK. Wants to talk about the same subject, Syria. Cyrus, welcome. Cyrus, you're on the air.
Hello, George. Hello.
Hello, sir. Go ahead.
Hi. I just firstly wanted to start off by saying I'm a huge fan of your work and all that you do, you know, the voice for the voices. I think it's brilliant. And
thanks,
I'm
Cyrus.
100% behind you.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the Syrian militants. I just really wanted to sort of echo what you've been saying in the show. I think the pressure needed to be put on Saudi Arabia and Israel, really. I think they're the main reason behind the Syrian civil war. I think if they put pressure on Saudi Arabia and Israel to halt their involvement with the militants, I think that it could actually be better for, you know, for all involved, really.
Brilliant. Absolutely agree with you on that, Cyrus. And I'm sorry to hurry you on, but I want to get one more call in at least. Meher is in the UK, wants to talk about Syria, I think. Meher, go ahead. Meher, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Okay, I'm... Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, madame. Go ahead.
Right. Oh, I salute you.
Thank you.
And good evening to you, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening, madam.
Yes. I'm really grateful to you that you give me some time to me. And nowadays I'm quite mournful because of the Nelson Mandela death. And he died. Nelson Mandela died. But his message will never die. God bless his soul.
Amen.
My most heartfelt condolences to his family and friends. I salute him for the great warrior and freedom fighter that he was. But his sacrifices remind us of the greatest sacrifice in history, which many people don't know, that a grandson of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein, who fought boldly to stand up against injustice and oppression 1400 years ago. He was denied food and water for 3 days before being savagely beheaded, along with 72 members of his family who had been captured and imprisoned for many agonizing years.
Meher, I'm going to have to draw this to a close because the show is ending. But it was a suitably emotional and powerful message that you delivered, which has been the message of comment this evening. It's been marvelous. Come back next week.
Just make sure your telephone volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. And actually, you need to put through your phone number and then we'll be back.